Welcome to the Words Matter Pod with the Kale Pinaka Podcast, dedicated to storytellers. I'm here with sports, portrait, and documentary photographer Anthony Gethers. How are you?
Good. I'm burning up, but I'm good.
Yeah, aren't we all, man? It's not the same heat that I was running around playing in as a kid, I swear.
Nah, man, this different heat. But I mean, today feel good because I went outside before I came and sat down, so it's not as bad yet.
Yet, exactly. So, who are you?
Well, I'm a Brooklyn native, born and raised out of Bedford-Stuyvesant. You know, I've always been a creative kid all my life. You know, since I was a kid, I started with drawing. I was a big comic book connoisseur, still am. Used to dabble in music and all sorts of ways to creatively express myself until I found a camera in grade school, around seventh, eighth grade. And, you know, the rest is kind of history, you know. So I've always been a kid who have always dabbled in anything creative. You could put a piece of paper in my face and find some sort of way to create something, you know. But I've always been one to be involved in the arts. So, you know, and also, aside from that, I've lived past life as a United States Marine. Been deployed in and out of Afghanistan twice in war. I've lived quite a life for being only 32.
Oh wow, you know? 32.
yeah. So I've lived, I've experienced a lot, and everything I've lived and experienced got me to this point where now I've been a photographer for now, I want to say 10 years since, well, more than that, but 10 years, about 10 plus years. Went from shooting sports to then, you know, venturing off and shooting portraiture and venturing off and shooting socio-political things and then the music and then so it's been quite the whirlwind of events leading up to being able to create two album covers for Lloyd Banks.
I was going to ask you about that. Yep.
Yeah. Which was I never saw it coming until, you know, the world went into chaos, and then, you know, out of chaos, you know, things happen. So, but yeah, I'm a creative, past warfighter. Still a huge kid at heart. Like, you'll find me still watching cartoons and shit and reading comic books and playing video games and you know, living this artist life now. So
yeah, I mean, what was that introduction to the camera like? You said I saw that you you discovered photography in like seventh grade, but who introduced it, or how were you introduced?
So, funny story. around seventh grade, I was still drawing at the time. It was like a group of us, you know, we all drew. We was all big comic book and video game connoisseurs. And then, you know, a history teacher of mine, they called it social studies back in the 90s. If you're a product of New York City public schools. And he was a history teacher. He also was a jazz musician. So, you know, after school, me and him, you know, because he ran a music after school program. So me and him, you know, kicked it. And, you know, we was just talking, fooling around. So, you know, he opened up a piece of mail. He was like, hey, do you want to enter this photo contest? Photo contest at the time was sponsored by Canon and Washington Mutual Bank. I don't know if anybody remember Washington Mutual Bank. It was one of those banks that was around the neighborhood and everything, and it was sponsored by UPN 9.
UPN, so, oh man.
I'm really a child of the 90s. Like, anybody that remembers UPN 9.
Come on, man. That was you know, like a smaller version of BT in a way.
Basically. So he was like, he asked me, did I want to enter the photo contest? I was like, yeah, sure, why not? Because, you know, I've always been wanting to try new things or whatever. I had no idea what I was getting into. So me and him went to the orientation. And, you know, after Ernie and Ash, this was who's the anchor for UPN 9 News, he gave the orientation speech. And we all got these, like, Canon PowerShot cameras. And, you know, the assignment was to go around in your neighborhood and photograph folks in your neighborhood that pretty much, like, who you think are important. And being at Bed-Stuy has always been a black neighborhood since, the 1960s, 1970s. I turned the camera on to, like, folks that owned the hardware store, folks that worked in the supermarket, folks that was in the school I was going to. I basically turned the camera on to the neighborhood because I considered everybody in the neighborhood to be important. Now, mind you, didn't learn how to take photos properly or whatever, so I was just making it up on the fly, you know? Photos were absolute trash, but I got addicted to it because I got to talk to different people. I got to interact with different people. I really got to, as a kid, find out on my own just how powerful the neighborhood I come from is, you know? Because as a kid, you know, you naturally, actually, we as black, we already know, like, the ins and outs of our communities or whatever, but this project really helped me to put the onus on how important this neighborhood is, and, you know, getting to know everybody and really, you know, being a part of our community here at Bed-Stuy. So, and then, you know, I fell in love with photography instantly. I was like, yo, I want to keep doing this. And then come to find out, as I'm doing some digging at home or whatever, and because also, like, I was a constant at the library. So anything I was interested in, I was in the library looking it up, doing the research on it. So come to find out, this was a fucking career. So I'm like, oh, shit. I didn't know. I had no idea photography was a career until looking it up in the library. And, part of being in the New York City public school system, you have to apply to what high schools you go into. It's like your precursor, your to introduction college. So I only applied for one school. I was like, all right, what school's got photography? Graphic arts high school, that was in Hell's Kitchen. Now at the time, because I didn't have a portfolio, because I had no idea you have to make a portfolio, any of that madness. So I went through another route, which was journalism. Because Graphic Arts High School, it was a vocational high school. This was like one of the last times, like, New York City was going to have vocational high schools of that magnitude. So, and they ran it like a college. You had journalism, photography, graphic design, pre-law, printmaking. So I was like, all right, I'm going to go in through the journalism route, but I'm not going to stay in journalism as my major, because although I can write, I hate writing. I hate the activity of writing. Because, you know, going to public school, I had to write a lot. So stayed for like half a year, half a semester, and then applied for the photography department and got in. And then, literally, I started, like, I didn't even touch a digital camera till I came back home for good. Like, literally, when we learned photography, we learned different formats of film. 35 millimeter, which is the roll film. 4x5 film, which is sheet. 120, we learned how to We learned how to operate the camera.
Yeah.
Shoot on film, process in the lab, and then take your roll of film, make prints out. Like, we learned bare bones photography. So that was my introduction to photography from 7th grade all the way to high school.
And what year is this?
So I picked up photography, well, because the photo contest, it was like early 2000s.
Okay.
Early 2000s, like, because I got to high school around 2004. So like 2002.
Okay.
2002 was like my first, like, all right, yo, my first time holding the camera. And then 2003. So like I was like, as a 7th grade, 2002, then 2003. No, I actually might have been 2003, yeah, somewhere in that timeline. Cause then after that, my senior year in junior high school, graduated, and then was off to high school in 2004. So from 2002-3 all the way to 2008.
Yeah. So you know, you were really formally educated in photography. We live in a time now where it's a little bit more do it yourself. With a lot of photographers, they basically train themselves and just learn through trial and error, which is cool too, because a lot of them are great as well. But you know, with all those photographers out there, and not many of them having that formal education, and you have, you know, I'm kind of fast forwarding a little bit, but you received your bachelor's in fine arts in photography and video from SVA, School of Visual Arts. What separates you as someone who was formally trained from those photographers?
Not much, really.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be honest with you. Not much, because they're learning at a faster rate.
Yeah.
Because of YouTube. Because like before, photography was gatekept by white folks.
Yeah.
To be honest. So photography was always gatekept, from studio photography to photojournalism, any kind of photography. Like, we as black people wanted to get into, it was always gatekept, or you had to go find somebody of high stature to learn under and everything. So there's really not much difference. The one difference would be the pace of learning. Whereas in a formal place, it's slower to learn. Whereas with somebody who's, you know, literally learning from this YouTube university and everything, they're learning at a quicker pace, you know? Now, where I fit in was, not only was I formally trained, but I'll tell you this. When Spike Lee was at NYU, right?
Yeah.
Instead of him just sitting on his laurels, he was, huh?
When he was teaching?
When he was a student.
Oh, when he was a student, okay.
He used NYU to, all right, I'm not just going to be a student here. I'm going to also make my films and write and apply my trade as an actual filmmaker. That's what I did at SVA too. It was like, all right, I'm not just going to be a student here, because I got an SVA right after the military, and going to college at 22. I'm like, look, I ain't got much time to waste.
Yeah.
If I was 18 and like still figuring out, I'd be like, all right, I got time to waste. But literally, I was coming out the Marines. And I was like, look, I got to get my shit together. I'm 22 and got time to lollygag. So not only was SVA like a learning ground for me, but I was taking what a lot of self-made photographers do. I was also learning from YouTube University and then actually going out there and applying what I learned to like where I wanted to go. So I was shooting, like, I started shooting sports in college. Like, the end of my freshman year, beginning of my sophomore year, that's when I was like hitting the ground running, also learning on the outside. Cause it's like the thing with college is like, yeah, they show you how to do, like, they show you like they teach you by the numbers.
Yeah.
But then the other part is you actually got to go and apply it. That's where you, like, the learning's going to accelerate for you. So I was not only taking from SVA, but I was also taking from what a lot of self-made photographers and self-taught photographers was like going through a YouTube university and learning. So it's really like I said, the only difference is pace of learning. I feel like self-taught photographers, they learn at a faster rate because everything's there. They don't have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all you have to do is pay internet money.
Yeah.
Keep your cable on. And all you got to do is just like sit like when I say literally everything is on YouTube, everything is literally on YouTube from shooting studio photography to landscape to whatever it is you want to do in photography. It's literally like all you got to do is just learn it. And then you go out and you apply it. So, like I said, pace of learning. And then the other thing would be like having somebody looking over your shoulder.
Yeah.
And tell you that's wrong, that's wrong. Whereas a lot of self-made photographers, they don't have that. It's like, all right, yo, they just got to figure it out themselves and they gotta constantly work at it, you know, whereas like with school, you kind of like, cause the way SVA works in a classroom setting is whether it was a technical class or a theory class,
yeah,
you would make the work and then they'd have your peers, critique your work. So, I received not only my education from a formal school setting, but I also received my education out on the street.
Yeah.
You know, cause, you know, meeting others, meeting self-made photographers, meeting, you know, the athletes I was photographing and, you know, getting feedback from them about what's good, what's not good. Like literally I threw myself into the ringer with shooting pro athletes. Like I was shooting kickboxers and other pro MMA fighters and boxers, and I was shooting them and, you know, getting feedback from them, and also like at home doing the self homework, looking up what sports photographers, what photographers, you know, like did what I did, and, you know, how can I apply to, you know, them. So, just that's really the difference between formally educated photographers and self-made photographers.
Yeah.
Pace learning and having someone constantly looking over your shoulder, critiquing you. Because like I said, a lot of self-made photographers, they don't necessarily have that out the gate. They gotta, you know, they gotta put in those 10,000 hours
or whatever.
They gotta put in actually four times that before they actually, you know, can attract other peers and other people that gatekeep and stuff. So that's really the only difference.
Yeah. But are you satisfied with the route that you took?
Yeah, because I'm satisfied with the route I took because I was always a go-getter, no matter what, if I was in the schoolhouse or whatever, it was always like, all right, because learning didn't stop with me in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
It continued on the outside. It continued with every photo shoot. It continued with meeting different people. It continued with showing my portfolio to different people. It continued with me learning, you know, how to do invoices and learning how to talk with different people, how to collaborate. It gave me outside, as we call it, gave me the additional education that was missing from the schoolhouse. The schoolhouse, it taught me all the technical stuff, all the know-hows, how to set up the camera, how to do all that, but it was outside that taught me how to, you know, how to talk to people that's in a higher place than me, how to, you know, how to negotiate a price, how to collaborate with different people, how to just be, you know, a black man, how to just, you know, work with different personalities, how to be a man of your word. So the route if I didn't take the route I took, the work that I do and the body of work that I have wouldn't be where it's at today.
Yeah. Yeah. So you still value, you know, the route you took while, you know, still appreciating the route that others took that wasn't so, you know, linear.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like I don't, like I, like, because I, to be honest, I like the, I'm a big fan of those photographers that, like, it didn't have the formal education, but they figured it out, because to do that, figuring out an art that's not, that wasn't
accessible for us.
Accessible, right. That wasn't accessible to a lot of people. They figured out how to navigate those waters and, you know, get the knowledge, and they will put it together and, you know, and be just as successful as the formerly trained photographers, you know?
Mm-hmm. So how does someone who discovered photography in seventh grade and went to SVA, well, you went to SVA after, but how did you end up in the Marine Corps as a machine gunner?
Yo, it's crazy. All right, so high school, right? So high school, I was a good student, you know, bit of a nut job, but so the graphic arts didn't have, they didn't let students know about scholarships and everything for a school that's dedicated to art, the arts and everything. We didn't have, there was no letting students know, like, all right, yo, these are these scholarships for y'all to go to these art schools or whatever the case may be. And, you know, at the, also at the time I was starting to help provide for the house, you know, help my mom and stepdad with the bills and everything. And plus also when I was in high school, I was helping to make a lot of documentaries about a lot of infantry Marines that was in Vietnam that had came home and everything. So that you know, between that little bit of that little doing that and then, you know, trying to figure everything out, I was like, all right, if I'm gonna, because I'm like, yo, I gotta figure something out. Plus I got sick of school.
Yeah.
Like I was like, yo, I am not ready for college. I don't want to do college right now. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get out the schoolhouse. And I was like, all right, if there's anywhere I'm going to go where the other nut jobs are at. Right. And I'm going to go, I wanted to challenge myself and everything. So the Marine Corps was it. Like, no recruiter had to come get me or nothing. I went to the recruiting office. I was like, look, here's my ASVAB score. Let's go. Send me to the infantry. All right. Because as the recruits were like, oh, shit, he actually know what he want. Like, no recruiter had to come, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, they didn't have to run game with me. I was like, I already know what it is. And, you know, a good friend of mine, he was like, yo, if you're going to be a Marine, go all the way with it. Don't be no desk jockey. Just go all the way with it. So I was like, all right, I'm gonna go straight to what the Marines are known for, fight. So, you know, I went to the recruiter's office, you know, took my ASVAB, got a high score. They was like, yo, you can have a desk job, whatever. I was like, nah, if I'm being Marine, I'm gonna do it all the way. And so I went to boot camp, summer of 2008, yellow footprint, stood on the yellow footprints, went to boot camp. Got a boot camp. Then went to the School of Infantry. That's where you learn your trade. You learn two sets of your trade. Since I became a machine gunner second half of school, because they was getting ready to split up the different, because there's like a lot of jobs in the infantry side. That's what I like to call the war fighting side. So yeah. I was like, look, I want to be a machine gunner. Fuck all this. Just, you know, being rifleman. I was like, look, let me really get into it. Yeah. If this is what I'm going to do. So, went to School of Infantry and then got to the Fleet Marine Force. That's like where you actually do your job. And then we trained for a year. I had a bit of surgery for both my feet because that was my first time in boots. Because let me tell you something. Like, being in combat boots is a totally different thing than wearing sneakers. Totally. And if your feet ain't really ready, you're like, I had a little bit, like, the physicality part wasn't the problem. It was my feet was in, you know, feet not being in boots in enough time. Like, because boot camp and school of infantry, that's one thing. But the bunions, man. So I'll tell you, that's black man's weakness. So I had him surgery. I had done surgery, and I was ready to go. I was still ready to go deploy to Afghanistan for the first time. So we went to Afghanistan, like, literally rehabbed, got back in shape immediately. Went to Afghanistan. First tour was like 2000. I want to say 2010. The last time the Yankees won a World Series.
2009.
Yeah. Right. So left around there. And then went there the first tour was from 2000. It was like 8 months from 2009 to 2010. Came back, had my second surgery, got ready. We went right back out the door. 2011 to 2012, came back home. And then I was out the door back into the world in August 2012.
And how was that? How was that experience? I mean, it's so different than, because you're an artsy, creative kid, you know, and then you go into this combat world, this life of, say, this
getting shot at, blown up.
It's very traumatic. You know, you making light of it, but it's like very traumatic, and it's so far from the things that you're into.
I'd say this. It's not, or I'll tell you this. You grow up in any inner city.
Yeah.
In America, not much is different, you know. You know, because we deal, you know, in inner cities in America, we as black people deal with being in the middle between the police and the government, waging war. And then because we got poverty here, you know, people may be being forced to, you know, be outside of themselves and everything. So it really isn't. And then also too, you know, dealing with like this, you know, regular, you know, black people that deal with PTSD from, you know, the systemic injustices that go on in a lot of our communities, especially in inner cities around the United States. So, you know, and living in New York, you see and experience everything. I've been in handcuffs. I've been in front of a police's fucking pistol. I've seen it all.
Yeah.
I've been, unfortunately, have, you know, experienced a lot. And also too, in New York, like, if, you know, haven't seen shit like 9/11 and been through a blackout, and I'm pretty sure you remember the blackout.
I remember that, man.
This place literally in a fucked up way got me ready for Afghanistan. So the only thing that was new was being worried about being blown up by IEDs, improvised explosive devices, roadside bombs, you know, having to worry about that, having to worry about if a kid is working with the Taliban. It's just like a lot of different moving parts to, because it's not just like everybody meeting on the battlefield like in the 1800s. Yeah, we all gonna meet in the middle of the battlefield. We're gonna duke it out. Nah, it's guerrilla warfare. You got to worry about stepping on booby traps. You got to worry about who's gonna shoot at you, who's the enemy. You got to worry about you know, doing the right thing in combat. I know it's weird, cause like, it's this complex thing. You got to worry about, you know, lack of sleep. You got to worry about, you got to sometimes carry, you know, the weight of the world. Like, damn, I killed it. You might've killed a kid today who might've, you know, might've taken your life. There's just a lot going on. So, and that really opened my eye, like, because it's one thing, you know, when you read about the world in books, read and you experience your environment, that's one thing. And but to experience how messed up the rest of the world is, and to see how the Western powers squeeze different third world countries, mm-hmm. to see how far the government takes it when they want to impose their will on a particular country. You don't come back the same.
Yeah.
You do not come back from combat the same. You have a different view of how the world is. You have a different view of how the world relates to you. How it relates to your people, especially if you're a black man. You're getting all that. You're like, and it's a fast download. Like, on 1 minute, you could be, you know, in a firefight, in a 2 hour firefight, and in the next hour of the day, you could be in the bazaar doing a patrol, and you're giving kids candy, you're interacting with the people in the village, and they're talking about, hey, we don't want you here, or, you know, hey, we got Taliban constantly attacking our village. Can you help us? It you know, between doing patrols and doing drug raids and all the different things that, like our ancestors did in Vietnam, but turned up over in Afghanistan, to go from that to go back to being creative and being an artist, it's a mind fuck. I'm not gonna lie to you. It's really a mind fuck, because to still have some sort of sanity on that, to be able to still make a conscious decision, like, all right, despite what I did, I'm gonna go and be a creative. To this day, like, sometimes I'm like, yo, how the fuck did I make it this far?
Yeah.
I even tell you, I've came onto some close calls, but I should be in a box today. I should be in a wooden box with some sort of flag fucking draping over my fucking coffin. So, it's really a mindfuck. And I don't encourage anybody to do it. Like, if you could find another way, if folks that look like us could find another way to, you know, be an artist and do that, but that's something you gotta make your bet in it, knowing, all right, like, I might not make it back home.
Yeah.
But if I do, all right, we're not coming back to this again.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
So that's how that was for me.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So, you know, the discipline, because, you know, you do learn discipline, and you said you were kind of a nut job growing up. So, you know, you go to where all the other nut jobs go, I guess, to get discipline? And, you know, if so, did that discipline help you as a creative?
I feel like there's two types of discipline. There's a discipline where, all right, yo, you need that tough love and everything. If I needed that, I would have stayed home, right?
Yeah.
There's this other discipline when it comes to doing your job, right? So going into an organization like the Marine Corps, and they give you a different discipline. It's not like your typical, I'm going to take my bet off and beat you discipline. It's the discipline to be able to perform whatever job you're given at to its maximum potential. Because when you go to combat, your life is not just in your hands. Like, you got other people's lives in your hands, not like to the man to your left and to your right. So you have to be good. Like, it's not a matter of being just good at your job.
Yeah.
You have to be steps above excellent to be able to perform, especially in combat. Right. So, but where the discipline comes in that is You have to be diligent in your training, not bullshit it, actually, you know, work hard, be a student of your craft, be a constant student of your craft, making sure, like, hey, I'm waking up every day and I'm taking it to the max every day, making sure your gear is on point, making sure your mental is on point, making sure your body is on point, making sure even your spirituality is on point.
Yeah.
Because it's so to take that sort of discipline and apply it to making sure you're proficient on the battlefield, even in stress, you take that same discipline and focus and you bring it home to now where you're an artist, you take those same things and you practice it. So parts of being an artist, you have to be consistent. You have to treat your mind, body. You have to have that same diligence when it comes to your being and your craft. Like, you always have to be a student. Mm-hmm. You have to go out into the world and apply your craft and constantly beat on your craft. And,
yeah.
And also because, and this is the other thing the Marine Corps taught, is like taking what you have and making the most of it, especially being that we did not get a whole lot of high tech gear and everything. So we had to like really be great at your job. Like every day was a pass and fail day. Like there's no, hey, you get a letter grade. Hey.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll let this slide. No, it's like, hey, like,
it's life or death.
I can tell you, it's literally life and death, whether you're in training or you're in combat. So even when we go, even up to like actual game day, you're still training, you're still getting ready. Like going to Afghanistan multiple times, before we even go into the area of operations, like where we're gonna be operating at for X amount of months, beforehand, we would still train, like still like, all right, yo, making sure like your marksmanship is on point, making sure your physical fitness is on point, making sure your knowledge is on point. So, and I still apply that to my artistic practice, as in, hey, making sure you're beating your craft every day, making sure you're physically, you're mentally, and you're spiritually fit, making sure that you're a constant student of your craft, making sure when you're planning, when I'm planning, just like how missions get planned out to the T, making sure, you know, my projects get planned out to a T, to even where if I need to adjust, I got that know-how to adjust and, you know, roll with the punches, making sure that, hey, before I step out the door, I got the gear I need. There's no, oh, damn, I forgot. There ain't none of that with me. It's like constantly you're doing your just like how in combat we do our pre-combat inspections, our pre-combat checks, doing that with my craft, like making sure I'm walking out the door with the equipment that I need, making sure I'm walking out with the knowledge that I need. And also the quote unquote metaphysical things, like, right, like your dedication, your commitment, your focus, your learn how to be a human being before photographer. Because I know in this world, you know, a lot of people kind of hate photographers because, you know, they all, like, a lot of photographers are opportunistic. They just want to go for the shot. They just want to post likes and post for all, they want everything fast. They, you know, it's just like, there's like rules and guidelines, just like how in the Marine Corps, like you, like having those intangibles, your dedication, your focus, you know, all those intangibles that make you, it's, and also, like I said, just knowing how to do your job, you know? So there's that particular discipline, you know, as opposed to like I like to call it the go get my belt discipline, you know? Cause still to be able to do, to have been able to do my job as a Marine and even as an artist, sometimes you need crazy to get shit done, right?
Yeah.
Because I tell you right now, in my artistic practice, there's several times I've had to sneak in places to photograph certain things, you know?
It's the thrill, though.
It's the thrill. Even in my Marine Corps career, when we needed shit, And, you know, there's a saying in the Marine Corps infantry, gear drift is a gift, right? So there's gear laying around and you need it, you know, you a little swipey swipe, little 5-finger discount, don't hurt nobody, you know. if you don't get caught. So, you know, taking the discipline required to do whatever it is, your goal, like having the discipline to accomplish your goals and dreams, it translated from having the discipline to make it back alive to now, okay, I can take those same intangibles and everything that I learned to like be an artist, be dedicated to my craft, making sure like, hey, you get up, you know, if you got to read, cool. If you got to go out and see the world for what it is, get up and do that. If you got to, you know, you got to work on your mentals, do that. You got to, you know, work on your physical fitness. Cause also what nobody will say, being an artist is also a physical thing, especially being a photographer. I cannot tell you how many times, like how often I'm carrying like 30 to 50 pounds of gear daily to go out and apply my craft. Like it's not like being a painter where you just everything's done at home. Like, nah, my craft, I gotta put on clothes and I gotta go out and I gotta hit the pavement and I gotta get to know people and I gotta see my community. I gotta meet different people. I gotta deal with different personalities. There's a whole lot I gotta do. So those are those two disciplines. When we talk about discipline, there's the occupational discipline and then there's the behavioral discipline, you know, that I take from the Marine Corps and apply it to my artistic practice. And biggest thing has been consistency. Biggest thing. So, which led me, you know, to shooting Lloyd Banks.
Yeah. But, you know, just to go back a little bit, you know, because you love sports. You take photos at all of the big street ball leagues in New York. And, you know, you took photos at MSG, Madison Square Garden. You took photos really, you know, soccer, so many different sports. You love sports. When, just to go back about when you're talking about being in the military and life or death and just knowing what everybody needs to do. In basketball, you also need to not only be aware of what you need to do, but you need to be aware, especially like when you're running plays, you need to be aware of like where your teammates need to be. So
see, everything translates.
Yeah, so can you apply, like, do you love basketball or does that, you know, your love of basketball, does that kind of translate to, or did it make it easier for you to operate in the battlefield and that's why you love shooting sports photography as much?
It's not just basketball. I'll tell you this. It's not just basketball because, like I said, where my relationship with basketball is like I've always been a fan of it, not necessarily – like I've played it on and off, but not like an active participant. But mm-hmm. because of the love of the game, I got a love for the game. I was able to, you know, show my appreciation for the game, you know, and seeing it from public school all the way to now. Cause like the one sport, like growing up in public school that was a constant, the number one sport, like especially in grade school, was basketball. Like wasn't no other sport. The one sport that I did participate in, because in high school I ran track.
Yeah.
But when you think of teams, right? So, growing up in the '90s and everything, and you understand how the school system moves and everything, they got us to learn how to work in teams, because you know group projects and everything. So between the sport side of schooling and everything, and I've always had an appreciation for teamwork. Yeah. Always had an appreciation for teamwork. Like out of a lot of things in life, I hold like camaraderie and brotherhood and teamwork. I hold that in high regard. So like, to see that in basketball and everything, and to take my experience, the concept of teamwork, you can apply it anywhere. You can apply it in basketball. You can apply it if you got to go on a job. Yeah, unfortunately, deal with folks, but the mission is on hand. If there's a goal, you know, even, you know, your personal endeavors, you know, working with your family. I mean, sometimes, you know, they could be knuckleheads, but, you know, just that concept. Even when we, you know, when we speak in about Black people in regards to community, there's teamwork. There's, you know, so I've always been a big teams guy. So,
yeah.
So, you know, from school to, you know, a tiny bit of my, even like with track, right? When I ran track in high school, although I was not the most talented guy on the roster, but you're going to catch me in the gym, you're going to catch me in the weight room, and then catch me on the track field. Anything I've done in life where it requires group participation, I've always like, all right, yo, you got to pull your weight. You got to serve the function of the team. So you can literally take that. And that's what draws me to basketball, is like seeing, you know, how teams operate, you know, like, seeing how guys perform on the court. That's always attracted me. So like, that's why I don't get in a whole lot of debates about,
who's the best and all that.
Yeah, who's the individual best based on, because I'm like, with basketball, it's a team sport. It's not, although, you know, we make it a barbershop thing to talk about who's the individual best on the court. But with me, it's like, I look at it on a team perspective. Like, all right, yo, who's the best guy that can take his team? Who's the best guy that can take his team to victories, to championships, to this, that, and the third. And, you know, through my lens, you can also see how teams work and everything. So, and you could, like I said, you could apply the concept of teamwork to anything you do. So, you know, it's really not a far thing. It's not really far from the military. It's just with the military, you're literally dealing with life or death.
Yeah.
Whereas with basketball, you're just dealing with championships and victories to get to the championships, you know?
Mm-hmm. So to go more into, you know, into your photography, you went out and you took photos during the protests in the aftermath of the George Floyd killing. And do you feel like you have a social responsibility to make sure that your work reflects the times?
Always.
Yeah.
Always. I feel as if, especially if you're a Black photographer, I feel like at some route, you ain't got to go the whole, you ain't got to do the, you don't have to, you know, go all out, but I feel like your art should in a way reflect the times. I mean, I think that's our duty.
Yeah.
And not just like Black photographers. I'm like any Black creator, I feel like, because we don't get the privilege of not reflecting on the times, because throughout our time, after Christ, and not just in the United States, but also abroad in other countries where there's melanated populations, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on that we can't just like turn our eye to, that we just can't like wither and hide from. So, the art, I feel like anyone creating art has at some point in your body of work, you should take the time and reflect on those times. Like, I'm not saying, you know, you gotta be all X Clan or, you know, you gotta go all Common before you know, got with, yeah, you ain't gotta,
yeah,
you know, you ain't gotta be all super conscious or whatever, but I feel like Like, because when you think about it, art and the video art and the video audio media, visual, audio, whatever, art in general is literally the last line of freedom, right?
Yeah.
So we as artists, we as people that create things, or that create art, whether, or just create in general, whether, you know, it's you with the podcast, because I consider that being art, or whether it's me being a photographer, documenting certain things, or a painter, or a graphic designer, or somebody who tags, or whatever, where the world slips up, where the media doesn't cover certain things, where the media doesn't really report on what's going on, where people try to escape with the newspapers, we got to be the ones to put it in their face, like, yo, this is what's happening. Like, and especially me, I, like, haven't grown up in a neighborhood like Bedford-Stuyvesant, and just in New York in general, where, you know, living among the different sects, different groups of black people, like the Nation of Islam, the fucking Moors,
yeah,
opera centers, motherfucking political activists, like mm-hmm. the Panthers, like even in my neighborhood in the 1970s, Bedford-Stuyvesant had a Black Panthers headquarters here, not too far from where I live at. So I feel like you have to reflect on times. That's why when everybody was in the house during the peak of the coronavirus outbreak, I was outside. I was like, look, I can't. Like, it's my duty to go and see what the hell's going on outside. And the minute the protests happened, I was like, look, and the uprising and everything, I was like, look, I'm outside. My community's outside. It's only fair that I'm outside with my community documenting and finding out what's going on. It's crazy because me and my brother always, because he's a school teacher. So,
yeah.
He uses my work to help educate, because he teaches an AP course
cool.
to his black students. So he uses my work to help educate his black students. So I was like, I better had go outside and fucking document and be with my community, because in a way I'm helping to educate his students on, so they can go on in life and do their thing. So and shit, Nina Simone, blasphemy, like her quote about an artist, it's an artist's duty to reflect the times, like, that always resonates with me, like, you know, because, you know, I photograph sports and this and that, but when it comes, like, especially with the topic, like, you know, what happened to George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, hell, even when, remember when Sean Bell happened?
Yeah.
Like, you could not, when Sean Bell, Amadou Diallo, like, it's hard to not reflect on those, especially now that I have the ability to do that, and I have the power, and I got the means to do that. Yeah, I had better fucking go out there and fucking, whether I'm talking about it, whether I'm putting it in art, I got to. And, you know, I've, you know, it's to the point where it's got me in trouble with the NYPD, but I'm like, I'll keep doing it because our people need to know what's going on, especially at the time where the world was closed off from each other. I was like, yo, I have to let people know what's going on in my community. Like, because if you leave it up to the New York Times or any other major platform, they'll get it wrong. So I was like, yo, it's my duty to go out here and document what's going on. And as well as, yo, talk to the people in your community, find out going forward how you can help them move forward with, you know, with things going on. Like, because I went out during the uprisings and I was with my community, I've built relationships to where, yo, if you need me for anything, whether as a photographer or you need my other skill set, I'm there. Like, you need an extra gun, I'm there. You need an extra shirt on your back, I'm there. you need someone to document whatever's going on, to tell, you know, I'm there, you know? So, yeah, I do think it's an artist, especially it's black people. I don't care about any other, I don't care about any other group of people. But for us, I feel like it is always a responsibility to, like, cool. You can do your cool shit all you want. You can make whatever art you want to make. But I always, to this day, even when I was starting to come up as a photographer, I always felt you gotta, at some point in your body of work, you gotta reflect on,
yeah,
on the times and where we are and where we're heading as a people.
Mm-hmm. Go back to what you said earlier. You were talking about people thinking that photographers are, you know, a lot of photographers just doing things for likes on Instagram and just for attention. Do you feel like, what level of care do you have when you go out and you take pictures of the protests? Like, you know, and, how do you, are you able to differentiate when it's appropriate to take pictures during sensitive times?
All right. So the level I care, and I'll speak to this about my entire body of work too. The level of care I have for the job that I do as a photographer. How can I say this? Every day I come back home, I'm beat to shit.
Yeah.
Because I put so much effort into doing what I do, like with the protests, right? I was out there it was me and a couple of other black photographers that live near me. And we would, you know, we talk on the phone like around 9 o'clock. Hey, where you at today? Hey, I'm in the neighborhood. Gonna go photograph, gonna see what's happening in the community today. Taking cameras, of course. We'll meet up and we'll go and we'll get lost in the crowd. We'll get, you know, and we'll, you know, in our heads, you know, we're based on what we're seeing, like, all right, what's the narrative today? What's the people's narrative for today? And then, you know, you're seeing and you're like, all right, let me photograph this leader galvanizing people. Let me photograph these people these people feeling a certain way. So like, for example, it's a good example. When the uprisers went to the Brooklyn Borough building near J Street.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it, because that's where Eric Adams used that day to push his campaign for to become mayor.
Because he was borough president.
Yeah. So he was like, all right, I'm gonna use this movement to make my way to become mayor. So, but noticing the assembly of everybody, hearing these politicians speak and everything, you know, I was noticing, like, before Eric Adams got up on the podium to speak, there was like a bunch of, there was a lot of homegrown activists. They were up there speaking, and I turn and I see, like, all right, I see a black father with his son, you know, let me photograph that. Let me photograph how people react. And like, so I'm always looking for, whenever I go out, I'm always looking for how can I best represent people, as well as, like, you know, what story do I want to tell? And how best can I represent people in telling that story? So I'm always looking, I'm always watching, I'm all talking to people. I'm like, hey, there'll be times I don't even pick up the camera. I'll just be talking to people. We'll start building on socio-political issues, mm-hmm. and, you know, what we as black, I take what I do as an artist, like, super serious, to the point where I always have something to write about. If you notice, like, my post on on Instagram, I'm always writing like 3 to 4 paragraphs about what I photograph. And that's the commitment I have to my craft, to the point where I come back with something I write. Hell, even if I would show you my notes on my notes on a notes app, you'll be like, God damn, you're always writing, you're always jotting something down. That's how much, even when I'm shooting portraiture, when I'm shooting like the little cool fun things, I'm always mentally aware of what's going on. I'm always aware. I'm like, there's several cylinders and there's several cylinders firing off to the point. Cause I tell you this, if I didn't care, I wouldn't even shoot it. I wouldn't even photograph it. Like, yeah, there's been people have asked me to photograph things. And I'd be like, I'll be honest, it's not what I do. It's not what I'm interested in, but I'll say it in a respectful way. But like, cause with me, I'm always of the thought process, like anytime anybody asks me to do anything, I want to give 200% of myself to the point of near exhaustion.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's the level of care I have, where like, even during the protests, I was running. I was doing everything. I was talking to certain leaders like, hey, look, listen, I see this and that and the third, you know, like, shit, I put in more, like, I cannot tell you how bad my feet were after after that summer. I was like, oh no, yeah, I gotta sit down for a minute and relax, because literally I took that, it was not a sport for me, but it was like, yo, this is the most important story of your generation, and I like being that's the most important story. Nothing else is getting created unless I tell the big bulk of the story. Even when, you know, the Knicks asked me to be their photographer for that one season, I was still outside regardless. I was still outside, you know, talking with people, finding out what's going on, still making those particular, not just like protest pictures, but just making those pictures in my practice. Because before, like, I even tell you, even when I was in college, when the Mike Brown and Trayvon Martin thing happened, I was outside. I was with people. I was finding out what the hell was going on. I was that's always been a big thing for me. It was like, all right, if I ever get the opportunity to, you know, talk about these things and let people know about these things, and, you know, be an artist that always talks about that, and not just talking about sports, then I'm going to do that. And like the uprisings was, when I tell you, I took that, like, I took it super serious. Like, even when, like, nothing else in the world had mattered to me. I wasn't expecting no pay out of it. I wasn't expecting no opportunities out of it. And when I was making that work, oh man, like, I cannot recall how many people was calling me for interviews. How many people was hitting me up for interviews. And I didn't treat it as a, oh, this is a chance for me to get famous. No. I treated it as if I'm a representative for my community. And I spoke without, you know, holding back. I spoke without, you know, centering myself. I was like, look, this is what's going on in our community. And what happened with Trayvon Martin, what happened with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, same thing happens here in New York. Same thing happens in many of our Black communities around. It got to the point when BBC Radio contacted me about doing an interview, and they asked me questions and I had to record it. They never played my interview.
Wow.
Because like the level of insight I was giving them, it was for them, it was too much. It was like, yo, we can't play this on air.
So, and they're usually more fair, I would say. You know, they actually,
you would think, right? Yeah. I would expect BBC Radio to be like, all right, yo, we're gonna put this out there, but they wind up not doing it. But still, I treated that time as like, yo, this is your only mission in life. This is your only, as an artist, this is your only task in life, is to document what's going on and to report with bias on what's going on, why it's happening, how is it affecting us here and everywhere we're at in the United States and the world. And so, yeah, and anything I photograph, any kind of art I create, I take that level of commitment.
Yeah.